Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Men in Tights podcast. I hope everyone that's going to be watching and listening to this is doing very well and just having a wonderful, wonderful week so far. And I'm recording this Saturday night. So whichever team won the Super Bowl, hope your team won. excuse me. This episode, because I'm trying to catch up on doing more wrestling podcast, because I feel like I've been kind of slacking on that in recent months, and I apologize to the wrestling fans that subscribe to this. So, trying to get more content out there for you, especially since we are currently on the road to WrestleMania 37. And so, let's get right to it. This episode is about women's wrestling. I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert on the history of women's in professional wrestling, but I'm just going to talk about my personal feelings and experiences with, you know, women's wrestling for the time that I've been watching professional wrestling in my life. So when I started watching wrestling, there wasn't really that much, at least in the WWF at the time, there wasn't really a lot of women's wrestling happening. I mean, not that there didn't have any women's wrestlers, because when I started, there was a Velvet McIntyre, Rockin' Robin, Sherry Martel, I think Fabulous Moolah was still around during that time period, but there wasn't really much focus on, like, the women's wrestling, you know, definitely not like it is today, you know, where they're main eventing pay-per-views, main eventing WrestleManias and all that, and, you know, but, you know, of course, like, women's wrestling goes back, you know, several decades, and maybe even almost 100 years way back, you know, with, you know, Mae Young and a bunch of other names. Mildred Burke is one of the oldest wrestling names that I can think of for women's wrestling. Like I said, I'm not going to pretend that I'm an expert and a historian on women's wrestling, but I'm just going to, because, like, when I started watching, yeah, there was, you know, there was Fabulous Moolah. I don't think she was as active at the time. There was Wendi Richter, but I think by that point she had already been in the AWA after leaving the WWF after the original screw job, where the Spider Lady, which was Fabulous Moolah in disguise, had, you know, screwed over Wendi Richter for the WWF Ladies Championship, as it was known back then. And then, you know, Sherry Martel was champion, and there was, you know, Rockin' Robin, Velvet McIntyre. There was a few others. There was I'm trying to remember the something bombshells, Blonde Bombshells, I think was the name. I don't know. It was a tag team known as something bombshells. Again, I'm not an expert on this, but there was also Miss Elizabeth, who of course, you know, was the Macho Man's real life wife at the time, but on TV they had split up, and they had the big moment at WrestleMania 7 where they reunited, and then they had the match made in heaven at SummerSlam that year where they got married as the main event of the pay-per-view. which is just funny to say that, you know, that a wedding headlined a WWF pay-per-view back then. And then after, you know, like, then they went through the little period of a few years where there was no real women's wrestling. I think, like, you know, like, yeah, at the time they really only had just Sherry Martel, and Sapphire. She had a couple of matches here and there during that time. But then in 1993, they tried to, like, reintroduce the women's wrestling into the WWF. And I know there was, you know, GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling back then as well. And of course, I did not watch that because, as far as I know, that was not a product that was available where I was at the time. I mean, I don't know for sure. There probably was. I mean, I grew up in Queens, New York, South Ozone Park. If it was on TV at that time, I don't know, at least in my area. Like 93, they reintroduced the Women's Championship to the WWF audience, and Alondra Blaze, Medusa from the NWA and WCW, was crowned the WWF Women's Champion. And, you know, that was my introduction, that I can remember at least, to women's wrestling on, you know, mainstream professional wrestling. And, Yeah, there wasn't. I don't remember that many of the other women that were wrestling during that time period, but I remember there was Leilani Kai, who fought Wendi Richter at the first WrestleMania, that she came back and wrestled against Alundra Blayze at WrestleMania 10. And there was also Bull Nakano that was there around that time. I believe that she had her on the match against Alundra Blayze at SummerSlam in 1994. And then the following year was Bertha Faye was introduced to the WWF audience, accompanied by Harvey Whippleman. And they had their feud over the women's title, and where they kind of went back and forth a little bit. And they had, I think it was Alundra Blayze and Bertha Faye, or Alundra Blayze and somebody else, that they had the first ever women's main event for Monday Night Raw. It was not Trish Stratus and Lita that they keep promoting. No, they had the main event match on an episode of Monday Night Raw in 1995. And then, Stephanie McMahon and Jacqueline, I believe, main evented on an episode of Raw in 2000, and then Stephanie McMahon and Lita main evented an episode later that summer. And of course, Trish and Lita, and then Charlotte Flair and Sasha Banks, and so on after that. We've had many more women's main events since then. But yeah, that was. And I, 'cause I remember I did my research on it to make sure about that, because they all kept promoting Trish and Lita, the first ever women's main event on Monday Night Raw, when it was not. But yeah, it was Alundra Blayze, and I feel like it was Bertha Faye, but I'm not sure. But I also remember the match that they had at Survivor Series 1995, that it was Alundra Blayze, and a few other. It was a lot of Japanese women's wrestlers. It was Bertha Faye, Aja Kong, and a couple of others that I don't remember their names, but I just specifically remember Aja Kong, that, and she wrestled on a few AEW shows as well, I think, or just one AEW show. I'm not 100% sure, but I remembered her being there as well. And she's another one of those legendary wrestlers from Japan. And Bertha Faye, she had her career in Japan that she was very known for, and that's how she got discovered by WWF and was brought over there. Yeah, it was like around the midpoint, around 1996, when they started to back away again from the women's wrestling, and that's when we had that's when we that's the t where we got the Diva era, the WWF Divas era, that was introduced to us through Sunny Tammy Sitch, who's she's had quite a few troubles over the last couple of decades, and of course, probably the most famous being Sable, introduced to the WWF audience at WrestleMania 12, accompanying Hunter Hearst Helmsley for his match against the Ultimate Warrior. And Sable and Sunny became the two of the hottest acts in the WWF for quite a few years at during that time, from 1996 to, like 1990, early 1999. They were the two hottest women in the company. Essentially, they were, for a little while, they were the only women in the company. But I mean, there was also Marlena, aka Terry Runnels. And again, this is when the focus was more on, we don't care if you can wrestle. We want to have these gorgeous supermodel women for the audience to look at and enjoy looking at. And yes, the audience did very much enjoy looking at at these beautiful women. Sable, especially with her very much out there for the audience to see. And Sunny, with her everything that, we all know her. We all know her history and her reputation. So, I don't have to go into too much detail about that. Wrestling fans who are very familiar with Sunny, with Tammy Sitch, they already know everything they need to know about her. And then 1997, we were introduced to a recent WWE Hall of Fame inductee from 2019, along with D-Generation X, the ninth wonder of the world, China, who unfortunately passed away in 2016, and goddamn, that really sucks. I remember I was very heartbroken that day when it was announced that she had passed away. But yeah, China was introduced to the wrestling world and became a sensation for a few years. And she was, you know, big, jacked up, you know, muscles, and you know, a lot of people say that she was on steroids. I can't comment if she was. I know she had her drug and alcohol issues. She had her substance abuse issues, but you know, unfortunately, that's a very common thing in the wrestling industry. I wish it wasn't, but you know, it is what it is. It's life, and it's unfortunate, but can't do much about it. At least not from my side of this things. So, you know, being just a fan, I'm not in the business. I can't really do that. But anyways, you know, China being introduced to the audience. You know, she was, you know, because of her size, she of course towered over, you know, Sunny and Marlena and Sable, and you know, she was toe-to-toe with the men and overpowering many of the men in the WWF at the time. And she became the dominant woman that was having matches in the WWF. And there was also Luna Vachon, who, you know, she was there in the earlier 90s, like 93, or introduced in 93, and then she was with Bam Bam Bigelow in 1994. And Luna had come back around that time as well, partnered up with Goldust, and she had her little feud with Sable from late 97 to like early 1998. And I mean, that was an enjoyable feud. It really was, you know, even with Sable's limited skill set in the ring, it provided entertaining segments, entertaining matches that they had. And it was also Jacqueline that was introduced to the WWF at the time. She had been, I believe she was wrestling on the independent scene before coming to the WWF, and was paired up with Mark Merrow during the early summer of 1998. And she had a feud with Sable that went on for a few months, where you know they had the mixed tag match at SummerSlam 1988, which I covered on my classic wrestling pay-per-views last summer, where it was Sable teaming up with Edge against Mark Merrow and Jacqueline. And Jacqueline, you know, being a legitimate wrestler, she, you know, had to carry Sable, you know, through that. And of course, at the time, you know, I was very much on the side of Sable, because you know, I was hitting puberty at the time, so I was enjoying Sable very much. Yeah. But then they were also, you know, announced that they were reintroducing the WWF Women's Championship later that year. And I think they actually had a tournament for that, and it culminated with Sable versus Jackie for the women's title. I don't remember for sure if it was a tournament. I'll have to rewatch the Raw episodes of Raw during that era. But yeah, they squared off for the women's championship, and I can't remember if Jacqueline won it first and then Sable, or if Sable was the one who won the vacant title. But either way, Sable ended up becoming the women's champion for a few months, and she defended it quite a good amount over those few months. She had a leather strap match with Luna Vachon at the Royal Rumble 1999. Had a match with Tori at WrestleMania 15, where we got the debut of Nicole Bass in WWF. And I was reading a Jimmy Corderas biography recently, and he spoke about being the referee for that match, and talked about how Nicole Bass, when it came to the spot where the referee bump spot, that Nicole Bass kept getting right in his vision, where he's supposed to pretend that he can't see her, but she's like right in front of him the whole time, and it's just like he had to improvise to pretend that he couldn't see her. So yeah. And then, yeah, she was the bodyguard of Sable, because around this is when Sable had turned heel, because she was the Playboy cover model around that time. You know, that she became like the quintessential ultimate diva at the time. You know, and then where she came up with the catchphrase, you know, "This is for the women who want to be me and the men who come to see me." Which, of course, you know, double entendres with some of that phrasing. And then this is also where we got Deborah Marshall had debuted around that time, partnering up with Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart. And around that time, Sable was having, I think, creative issues with the WWF at the time, and, you know, was leaving, and had a nasty lawsuit with them that went on for a few years, and they awarded it to the Women's Championship to Deborah, who, again, she was not a wrestler, she was literally just there because she was gorgeous. And then eventually she lost the title to Ivory, who debuted earlier that year as well. And of course, Ivory was, you know, she came from the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and she was a legitimate wrestler as well. And she's a WWE Hall of Famer too. She was inducted, I believe, in 2016. She's one of my favorite women's wrestlers as well. And she's a very fun personality. She is, like, especially, like, if you follow her on her social media, she's a very fun woman to interact with. Sorry, a little gassy at the moment. Where was I going with that? they tried to, you know, have a little more, like, wrestling with the women around, like mid to late 1999, with Ivory being the women's champion. She had a couple of matches with Tori during that time as well, and Jackie was part of it too, and then Stacy Carter, who was Miss Kitty and then became the Cat, spelled with a K, Cat with a K, and that she became the women's champion from the evening gown pool match, or whatever it was called, at Armageddon 1999 pay-per-view. Because again, like, they would be the times where they have, you know, serious women's wrestling, you know, for a little while, but then it goes back to, you know, that they're just sexual objects kind of presentation. Which, I mean, yes, they are beautiful women, and, you know, of course, men are going to enjoy looking at that. Some women are going to enjoy looking at that too. But, you know, after a while, just looking good, it's only so much you can do with that. You got to be able to, you know, give a good entertaining match as well. And there's only so many times that, you know, having these women stripped down to their bra and panties can only be so entertaining for so long. Yeah. You know? And I know there's a lot of men out there who wishes that it can go back to that. That's fine. Good for you. That's how you feel. I hope it doesn't go back to that, because, I mean, it's progressed so much in recent years that it would be such a regression, and, you know, I know there's people that would say, oh, snowflake this, snowflake that, blah, 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 grow a set of balls, blah, 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 but, yeah, I mean, think of it, I mean, I don't have any kids, but just think of it as, you know, those of you who have daughters, would you want your daughters to be, if they wanted to be, to join, to become, they wanted to be, get into the wrestling business, would you want them to be seen as sexual objects like they were at the height of the Attitude Era? Pretty sure you wouldn't want that. You would want them to be, you know, you would want them to be taken seriously in main eventing WrestleMania like Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey did, you know. It's just crazy that even now, 20 years after a lot of that stuff happened, that there's still a lot of critics out there that like to point to that era of WWF, specifically the Attitude Era, with how they depicted women, to try to talk down on the business as a whole, and that is very unfair. It really is unfair, and yeah, but that's unfortunate, because there's a lot of those critics of professional wrestling, they always like to bring up the past, and they never want to talk about, you know, how much things have progressed since then. I mean, because, like, in 1999, 2000, you know, we started to see more, like, actual women's wrestling, you know, showing up again. Like, we had Lita showing up first with Ese Rios, you know, she debuted with him in 1999, or was it 2000? Yeah, it was 1999, and she was Miss Congeniality in ECW, and ECW doesn't know, like, they primarily presented their women as, you know, gorgeous sex object women's, you know, like they had Beulah McGillicuddy, you know, the wife of Tommy Dreamer, and Francine, and who else? Elektra was another one that she was there. That she was part of the with Louis Dangerously and a couple other people. And Dawn Marie was another one. Which means no disrespect meant to any of those women. You know, they served the purpose for which they were hired for, and they're all lovely human beings. I've interacted with a few of them on social media. They are wonderful people, but you know, Lita was one of the ones that she wanted to be a legitimate professional wrestler, and you know, of course, you know, she is my all-time favorite women's wrestler, number one. You know, I've made that very well known to a lot of people. She is my all-time favorite, my current favorite. Although it's kind of, you know, depending on my mood, but overall, my current favorite would be Charlotte Flair, because she's probably the most consistent in-ring women's performer with the women in WWE right now. I'm very rarely am I disappointed by any of her matches, if ever. Honestly, yeah, it was when with the introduction of Lita, that's when it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, she's gorgeous, but at the same time, it's like, you know, that she can kick ass in the ring, and that's what made her even cooler to me and to a lot of fans. And then we were also introduced to Trish Stratus around that time as well, and she was brought in, you know, primarily because of how she looked, and she was and still is very beautiful. And I will never deny that. She's definitely one of the most beautiful women to ever grace the halls of the WWF, WWE. But Trish, you know, with her, you know, from her origins in professional wrestling, being the eye candy, to eventually becoming one of the best women's wrestlers that they ever saw, you know, that's when the company was really, you know, they were still in that, like, that mid-level part of, you know, that we have the eye candy, but then we have the great wrestlers too. You know, it was like that little period from like 2002 to I would say about mid 2006, you know, where there was still like, we have the eye candy over here, but then we got the ones who can kick ass in the ring right there. And there was because there was a lot of them still that were just there primarily as eye candy. Yeah, you know, like with the introduction of the Godfather character, where they had a lot of beautiful women. Yes, a few of them were legitimate quote unquote escorts that they would bring in, depending on the towns that they were performing in. But they would have a few like local indie independent women's wrestlers or like bodybuilder types that were there, like fitness women, and Victoria being one of those women. You know, Lisa Marie or Tara, as she was known in Impact Wrestling. Who made her WWE return at the Royal Rumble this year, which was pretty damn cool. I marked out huge for that. She is one of my favorites as well, and I hope she gets a Hall of Fame induction very soon. She is very much deserving of that. Sorry. I see, and I don't have my drink with me, so I should have made sure I had that before I recorded this. But it's just, I don't know, like, women's wrestling, especially in WWE, just has such a shaky history where they had the great women way back, and then they became all about the eye candy, and then they started to be taken seriously again, but then it regressed back to being primarily eye candy, and like they weren't really allowed to have serious wrestling matches and serious storylines. And it's not, this is from the women themselves that were there during those years. You know, women like Tori Wilson and you know, Ashley Massaro, the late Ashley Massaro, passed away a few years. Well, she took her own life a couple of years ago, and I did my little podcast speaking on that and how sad I was for that, because even though I never actually got to meet her, I had a lot of social media interactions with her, and she was just one of the sweetest people ever, and it really broke my heart to hear that news. But there was a lot, like I say, a lot of the women's wrestlers that they were wanting to be taken seriously and be taken seriously as athletes and wrestlers and performers, but they were still seen primarily as eye candy. And I was rewatching older seasons of Tough Enough and seeing some of the women that were on there that I had no idea that they were even part of it. In the first season of Tough Enough, from the auditions, ODB, most famous for during her time in TNA Impact Wrestling, she was one of the women that auditioned in that first season of Tough Enough, and I had no idea. And when I saw that, I just thought, that's pretty damn cool. That was really cool. And there was quite a few women that actually came out of these seasons of those different seasons of Tough Enough that are that have went on to have a very successful career in wrestling. You know, like I said, ODB and that first auditioning in that first season, Melina auditioning in season 3, and she went on to have quite a career of herself. When they brought Tough Enough back in 2011, that Eva Lise was part of it, and she's gone on to have a very good, successful career. I mean, Lucha Underground, she was with in NXT for a little while, been competing with AEW as well. She's doing very well for herself, and I'm definitely a fan of hers. I'm trying to think of a few others. Because there was so many of them that I can't remember though, that they auditioned. But you know, there were still other women that during those years, like Jazz, who came from ECW, made her WWE debut in 2001, and was there until I think early 2005. And then Molly Holly was another one. She was a legitimate professional wrestler that she struggled a lot with trying to be taken seriously and trying to help the division be taken seriously and. Having to train some of the Diva Search girls that were brought in 2004, 2005, and that they weren't, that she felt like they weren't taking it seriously enough, so she chose to leave the WWE. And she's made some appearances since then, a few appearances in Royal Rumbles and a few of the Table for Three shows on the network. And then, like, others that have come in through the different Diva Searches that they've had, Christy Hemme, Michelle McCool, Undertaker's wife, who she went on to have a good career as an active performer in the ring, being a multi-time women's and divas champion. Layla was a Diva Search winner and contestant that she became a women and divas champion. Ashley Massaro, she was the second Diva Search winner. Candice Michelle was part of one of the Diva Searches as well. There was a few of them that I can't remember. I'm trying to remember all of them though. There was Joy Giovanni, Amy Weber, those are the ones that were primarily eye candy as well. Stacey Keibler she came in from WCW along with Tori Wilson. They were primarily eye candy, but they were also trying to improve in the ring and be taken seriously as wrestlers in the WWE during that period from 2004 to 2007, and they eventually left the WWE when they saw that there was really not much left for them to do there, which was unfortunate because they were both starting to really improve significantly during those years. Gail Kim was another one that she's had quite a history with WWE off and on. For a while, where she has her ill feelings with the treatment of women, specifically Asian women in WWE, and how they with different reinforcing of stereotypes and things like that, and how she feels that they're not being given a fair enough chance, which I mean they are now, especially like in NXT. With like Io Shirai and also we have Asuka as the Raw Women's Champion, who I absolutely love, Asuka. And if you don't subscribe to her YouTube channel, please do so. Her YouTube channel is so much fun. Kairi Sane, who I miss her very much. She's back in Japan being an ambassador for WWE over there, which is awesome. I love that she's still part of the WWE family. Because I know a lot of fans thinking, oh, she's going to go to AEW, blah, blah, blah. Because, once somebody leaves WWE, they're automatically going to go to AEW. It did happen for a few, but not all of them are going to do that, trust me. It's mainly WWE that has that shaky history with women's wrestling. Because for so many years, it was the office, that treated them like a joke and primarily wanted them there to just be the eye candy, that when they wanted to have serious matches and serious storylines, like, no, we're going to send you out there for a 30-second match with we're going to put 10 women out there, a 10 women's tag match, and you have to get it in and out in 30 seconds. Like, come on. That's such bullshit. It's really unfortunate. But then, like, you had some, like, you know, when TNA, when they, you know, introduced their women's division, and when they introduced the Knockouts Women's Championship in 2007, for a few years they were the company that had the solid women's division in professional wrestling that the whole world, fans all over the world, were talking about. You know, that it was led, you know, by women like Gail Kim, by women like Awesome Kong, and ODB, and and a few other women that over time, you know, were really put a good stamp on the division. Zelina Vega, who, you know, was recently let go from WWE, she was a significant part of the women's division of TNA. Cheerleader Melissa, I can't remember what name she went with in TNA, but she was a big part of that as well. And Jacqueline, she was on there as Miss Jackie. And Jackie Gaeta, who came from Tough Enough 2, she was part of it as well. Although I don't think she won any championships when she was in TNA. Yeah, like, especially Gail Kim. Gail Kim being the first woman to be inducted in the TNA Hall of Fame. She was the pioneer of the Knockouts division for that company. And quite a few women that also came over from WWE that made a big, significant impact, pun intended, in TNA Impact Wrestling. Taryn Terrell, she was Tiffany in WWE. She was a multi-time Knockout champion in TNA. And a very good performer in the ring. I enjoyed her there. And Mia Yim, when she was in Impact. I was a fan of hers way before fans knew who she was, when she was Jade in Impact Wrestling and coming to NXT, because I used to interact with her a lot on Twitter especially, and she was just one of the most amazing people I had known back then. And seeing where she is now, I'm very proud to say I knew her when, you know. And she's another one that's just an awesome one in the ring as well. And Rhea Ripley and Toni Storm, just like WWE has the best women's roster that they've had in so many years right now. They really do. They have so many great women in the ring that can just kick ass and deliver some of the best matches. Like, you know, yeah, we have Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, Io Shirai, Asuka, Rhea Ripley, Toni Storm, I'm drawing a blank now. Naomi, Ember Moon, Bianca Belair, I'm blanking out, but yeah, it's the best roster that they've had in a long time. Bayley, Dana Brooke, Mandy Rose even has improved quite a lot. Sonya Deville, so many great women in WWE right now that are getting the time to shine and, you know, really show people that we are just as good or greater than the men that are doing this as well. And let's be fair, some of the women can wrestle circles around some of these guys. And like with Ronda Rousey, when she came in 2018 and had her year with the WWE, that was when the women's division in WWE was really, you know, skyrocketed to new heights, you know, significantly. You know, where we had the all women pay-per-view evolution, which I hope I really want them to bring that back, because it was an awesome pay-per-view. It was my favorite pay-per-view of 2018, and just, you know, and they headlined WrestleMania, and just and I know Ronda Rousey, she still has her good relationship with WWE. I just don't know if she's ever gonna actually come back and do in-ring performing again. And Shayna Baszler, that's another one I forgot. But I hope she does, because she really helped women's wrestling in WWE be taken seriously in the mainstream, and shed a positive light on the business again. And then, like, other companies that have tried to, you know, try to build their women's division, like Ring of Honor tried to do that for a little while, and they've kind of struggled. They've had their issues with some of the women over in recent years. And in AEW, they've at least to me, they while they have a great roster of women in the company, they really struggle. To me, they really struggle to have the division be taken very seriously. And no, it's not at all like some fans think because of Nyla Rose. That is not my reasoning for it. It's because to me, I'm a big fan of the storytelling aspect of professional wrestling, and I feel like the stories told with the women's division, specifically when it comes with regards to the women's championship, the stories being told there's not enough there for me to be invested in the stories that are being told. And again, not discounting or downplaying any of the women's abilities in the ring, because they are all great at what they do, but it's just I just don't feel invested in the stories that they're trying to tell. And that is not necessarily their fault. It's more of a fault of the creative aspect of it. That's all it is. But they do have a lot of great women there who are wrestling. Thunder Rosa, she is absolutely wonderful. And I'm actually a Facebook friend of hers. And we've interacted quite a bit. She's wonderful, too. I love her very much. And I love how she's been... He's getting to see that big spotlight, with being the NWA Women's Champion, and getting to showcase herself on NWA Power and being on AEW Dynamite and Serena Deeb as well being a big part of that. I love women's wrestling. I really do. I love that it's being taken seriously. Finally, and that these women are getting to showcase themselves as real athletes, and I want to see more of that. I want to see another Evolution pay-per-view, another all-women WWE pay-per-view where we get to see more of these great women giving us great matches, because we know that they can. They've shown us countless times, time and time again, and that's why it disappoints me when I see a lot of men on social media saying that they want to go back to the bra and panties era of women's wrestling. I hope that it never goes back to that. I mean, if you want to watch that, they have it on the WWE Network. You can check it out anytime you want. I don't want that anymore. At the time, yes, I enjoyed it. Again, I'm a man, and I know some women enjoyed that as well. But that was my vulnerable years of figuring out what I like in my teenage years. But now at 34 years old, I don't need to see that anymore. I want to see women telling great stories in the ring with their wrestling abilities. I don't want to see a bra and panties match. I don't want to see lingerie pillow fights. I don't want to see any of that shit ever again. Yeah, if I ever feel the urge to watch it, again, I'll pop it up on the WWE Network. Otherwise, I don't want that anymore. I want serious women's wrestling. I want to see women headlining wrestling pay-per-views, whether it be for WWE or in AEW. I want to see women's wrestling being taken seriously like the men are taken seriously. That's what I want to see. Especially if one day, if I am fortunate enough to have a daughter and she falls in love with professional wrestling like I have, and she even wants to become a professional wrestler, I want her to aspire to be a Charlotte Flair or a Ronda Rousey or a Trish Stratus, in her later years. Or a Becky Lynch. I want her to aspire to be something, to be that. I don't want her to try to be a Sable. If that's what she wants to do, then I'll support her either way. But just if I do have a daughter who wants to get in the wrestling business, I would hope that she would want to be like a Becky Lynch or a Charlotte Flair or a Thunder Rosa or an Allison Kay. Those great women wrestlers. All right, I can exhale now. I feel like I've said my piece. And if anything I said made any sense to anybody, thank you very much for listening and for watching. That's going to do it for this episode of the Men in Tights Podcast, episode 108. Is it 108 or 109? I don't remember. Yeah, I think it's 109. Let me double check that because I honestly don't know. 109, 109, ba da bum bum bum, ba da bum bum bum. I'm loving. Yep, it's 109. So, Sorry, like I said, I'm spending all weekend and all night recording different podcasts and videos for you guys, but I'm trying to catch up and keep up, present some good stuff for you guys. But thank you all so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing, and if you're not subscribed, please do so. YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Castbox, Radio Public, Breaker, and Anchor. All the direct links are in the description of this episode. Support the Minutize Podcast by joining my Patreon, $1 a month, if you feel so kind and so generous. You don't have to, I understand. Or you can support me by purchasing something from my podcast store. The link is in the description for that as well. And also, if you're feeling extra generous, please donate to the Autumn Side or Tribute Fund on the AFSP. That link is in the description as well. And thank you all so much, again, for watching, for listening, for subscribing. I truly and genuinely love and appreciate every single one of you who do. All of you mean so much to me. All the wonderful people that I've been acquainted with recently. Hope you're all doing well, staying safe, taking care of your loved ones, staying healthy. And this has been the Manitides Podcast. I am Julian, and I will see all of you on the next one. Bye-bye.